Welcome back. You're watching Stockwatch with me, Julieta Tulevi, and joining us in studio this evening are David Shapiro from Sassman Securities and Wayne McCurry from F&B Wealth and Investments. If you'd like to send us questions, please do. You can SMS us 41392. You can email stockwatch@bbtv.co.za, or you can tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. David, Wayne, nice to see you both this evening. To be perfectly honest, I don't know where to begin.
We can begin last week.
Yeah.
How very positive we were when Jay Powell reduced rates by 0.25% and everything was on track to go higher. The US markets were heading towards new highs. We were looking at corporate results and everything was fine. That was last Wednesday.
Yeah. And then on Thursday, of course,
well, since then,
the trumpet, as we call him in this in these here parts, came out, ignited a trade and potentially currency war, and everything seems to have gone to hell in a handbasket. So we've got the Rand, 15.05 against the dollar today. Brent crude, I've just looked at it now, $56 a barrel. Iron ore is collapsing. Copper prices collapsing, U.S. stock markets, and you've got these incredibly, incredibly low interest bond yields and negative yields.
Yes.
I mean, Wayne, is it all over? Is it game over?
Who on earth knows? Okay. We hope and we pray that Donald Trump is playing a negotiating game with a big stick. Because if he can't retreat, understand, he can never retreat without a deal. So he can't cut these tariffs if no deal is reached. Quite frankly, I think any deal could be reached now, because he will just swing it as to though they've given in to him, even if they haven't really, but it doesn't matter. Any deal could be reached now, or no deal could be reached. If there's no deal, all hell will break loose. But I think President Trump recognizes this, because make no mistake, no matter what he tweets and how he interprets everything, it is quite clear he has tied his presidency to the success of the U.S. economy and stock market. And there's an oxymoron there we can chat about later. Mm. If this thing dumps, doesn't matter what he says, it'll be a clear finger pointed at him because of these trade wars, and this is the consequence of the trade wars. And I clearly don't think he wants that. So there is still a possibility, even though it's outside, that they do actually strike. Even if they strike a further truce, because we thought they had a truce.
Yeah, and exactly. Things were looking kind of...
I think he caught the Chinese by surprise. I don't think...
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. It's a negotiator. Yeah. He caught his own negotiators by surprise, as he did with the Sunday tweet as well.
David, with the Rand at 50, you know, okay, yes, we are getting caught up in this global setup,
yes,
but it doesn't help when you are a fundamentally weak economy. And in fact, I wrote in this week's Financial Mail, our economy is in a parlous state to begin with. So when the tide goes out, you are especially
you're naked.
You know, and so this is one of the issues.
The tide never came in for us.
Yes, exactly.
We've just been naked out there the whole time.
Yeah, the two biggest issues, or the biggest issue, is Eskom. And for Eskom to admit, and I don't know whether the Bloomberg story I'm sure they check their sources and they give the quotes, where Eskom has gone around and said that it wants government to basically take $300 billion, and I'm rounding it off, of debt onto their balance sheet, and Eskom can handle $150 billion, and therefore cover it quite easily with revenue. How can you put $300 billion onto the government at this? You can't.
But you have to find a place for 300.
Okay, so this is the other
question. Because neither one is viable with this 300. The government and Eskom is not viable with this 300.
Yeah, but you can't, you know, it's like this hot potato that you're passing around. Someone ultimately has to hold it and pay for it.
You get a debt trap, which means that any revenue that we earn in this country goes to pay interest, with very little to pay social grants or reinvest in the economy. So you go down the spiral.
Look, we might be on the, you know, on the precipice now, close to the precipice, but we've just got to be cautious about being fatalistic, because now all you hear nowadays in the last 2 days is IMF bailout.
Yes.
All you hear, IMF bailout, you swear it was happening next week.
Well, that's Jan Rupert's fault. Yeah,
but okay. It doesn't matter. It's not happening next week. If, however, we don't change track, and I think we are going down the right track, even though sometimes it seems 3 steps forward and 5 steps back, but we are going down the right track now. If we don't continue on this road and accelerate, we will end up at the IMF store. But it's not next week.
Yeah, in fact,
it's not next week.
I spoke to Peter Armitage, and he said it's not like you wake up one morning and suddenly you're in the arms of the IMF. No. The signs will be there, and it's when basically when you stop being able to raise the borrowings that you need to in the markets, and you stop having that ability.
Well, there's no capital inflows.
That will come with a downgrade. But I think more important, let's ignore IMF, is the warning that Mike Brown from Nedbank gave.
Of course,
those are the warnings. And where businessmen of his caliber who run banks and very respectable banks start to say, hold on, we're running out of time, you've got to take that seriously.
And we are running out of time. But running out of time is not next week.
Mm. Okay. All right.
Look, a rough agenda of negativeness, if you want to call it that, is Moody's gives us negative outlook. We get downgraded to junk status February, March, April next year. It's not sooner than that. That is the most negative, unless something goes crazy wrong.
Unless it's after the medium-term budget.
Yeah, but that will be the downgrade to negative outlook.
So
the junk status, and by the way, junk status is coming, but it's also not coming next week. It's probably coming in six, 8 months' time.
Judy, you know what worries me more than anything else? And it's really the fundamentals. Okay, and oil price is in our favor, but we've got the weaker rand that kind of offsets it. But suddenly we started to see the copper price start to ease. Oil, and that will be associated with coal prices coming down, iron ore price coming down.
Iron ore was too high.
It was too high, but we were benefiting from that. Platinum is holding its own, but broadly, commodity prices start to suffer.
The world is slowing down, and it's being exacerbated by Donald Trump and trade wars. Mm.
Yeah.
So none of this is good. So unfortunately, the good years, which is, say, the last 10 for the world's economy, because of state capture and domestic issues, we didn't, in other words, as I said early on, the tide didn't come in for us.
I know, we've been naked the whole time, and we don't have the best body to show for it, unfortunately,
just on that particular one, we might not have the best body, okay, but in relation to other countries in junk status, we are beauty queens.
Well, okay. Yes. I like this analogy.
Venezuela's inflation
is
35,000%.
No, listen. Venezuela and Zimbabwe, thanks.
Turkey, Brazil,
Argentina. That's that 400-kilogram person that you can't winch out of their own house. Oh. And you're comparing us to that person.
Yeah. Wayne, at least it's a comparison.
There's a question. Okay, so the one is, to the esteemed team, the fair value of the rand now, Wayne said, between 13 and 14 a few weeks ago, so now we're 15.05.
And remember, we were 15 4 weeks ago as well. Okay, so 15 is not new to us. It's not as though we're entering new territory. Yeah? When it got to 15 last time, came back to 13.80. So it's not new territory for us. And we've said it consistently all the time. In fact, I'm getting our bank to change their narrative now, not to give a forecast for the rand, to say what they think fair value is, because the rand is volatile. Mm. It can go to 16 tomorrow, or if something goes right, it can go to 13.50. I mean, it was 13.80 a week ago. So the rand is volatile.
But fair value is still
13.50, 14, somewhere in that
region.
But
in all fairness, this is not the time you can look at any fundamentals. You can't even look at company results because you're being pulled one side by currency, the other side by worries by Donald Trump, by worries of trade wars, by worries of consumer confidence falling, by worries of business investment reducing, and so on. So you're going into a spiral which is manifested itself, or which is obvious in the way that interest rates are falling. I'm talking the US. Yes. You've got 1.6% on the 10-year bond, which is lower than 2008 and 2009.
It was 3% a year ago.
I mean, that is an extraordinary occurrence.
Your 30-year is at 2.15 or something. Your 30-year bond in the US.
That suggests
that's an all-time low. Really. All-time low. Yeah. So when you go into those kind of issues, fundamentals mean nothing.
Look, maybe it's so easy to get caught up in the mood of the day. We must just maybe take a step back and look at it. What's happening in the world is a slowdown in the growth rate. The world is not on the edge of a fully blown recession. Okay. First of all. Secondly, inflation is well under control worldwide. There's no inflationary scare. There's no ways that higher interest rates is going to push us into recession. In fact, as we just said, lower interest rates are going down, not up. So at worst, your outcome is actually deflation. Now, deflation is a terrible thing, but it's not a recession.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, but deflation can lead to a recession.
Yeah, although you, and but now you've got, you know, the banks warning of recession, cutting the bonuses, which, I don't really
if we don't sort it out, in the meantime, you've got Trump tweeting and going at the Fed. It's a time they should sit down and understand what's happening and sort it out. Not the opposite.
Yeah, okay. But yeah.
Sorry, we're going just, on and just, on.
No, we've got to get to questions because they're streaming through.
Just another thing that Donald Trump, once again, he's taking full go at Google here and the social media guys. Just be careful on this. This is a growing worldwide trend of politicians thinking that these people are too powerful, and Trump in particular thinking that they directly manipulate. This is just the start of a political backlash against the strength of the social media.
Well, they backed Hillary.
And he uses them to great
it's
effect.
It's like the Washington Post.
A question. It says from Robert. Wednesday team. A year ago, I said gold looked like a good buy. We collectively agreed I'm just a typical old man. Makes me a bit nervous to make another dud call because gold, of course, I mean, if you look today, there were a couple of little bright spots in the market. It was gold. Anglo Gold, Ashanti, all gold shares, and the gold.
Why has gold run? Gold has run because of trade wars and Donald Trump. So gold didn't run because something happened uniquely attributable to gold. It's this whole global thing we're talking about. So in other words, you'd have made as much money buying US bonds, maybe even more than buying gold, because what triggered this all is Donald War and Donald Trump and trade wars. So it's not that something unique was triggered. This is just a reaction to an event. So to buy gold, you would have had to have called this event correctly.
We're getting the same story from the cryptocurrencies as well.
Same story.
You know, everybody's walking around Melrose Arch with Bitcoin books, how to become a billionaire and selling them.
Bitcoin books and bulging muscles from your tweet. You said it's the personal trainers, the version activist saying,
you got to know.
Buy Bitcoin books.
You've got to be cautious.
Okay.
And his sweet chap, Michael, is always, he's going to get me tomorrow. Anyway.
All right. So, yes. I mean, if we had the gift of prescience, we'd just not be here, although other than for the pure fun of it. What about Tsoko-san, Anchor Capital, and Impact at current levels? Impact came out as results today, which were pretty good. And the shares, in the day when there was complete carnage on the market, it rallied 8%.
Just read the full statement. There's a warning sign about what lies ahead. I think this was opportune coming from it. Yeah.
This is what happened in the last 2 years, actually.
Yeah, but he certainly, CEO certainly doesn't paint a bright picture of what lies ahead. Yeah.
No one does.
Yeah.
I mean, he's essentially saying in the outlook statement they expect no growth in the South African economy.
Yeah.
So then, but then there are sort of turnaround factors and.
Well, he sees agriculture picking up a little bit in that, but there's still factors there that are warning signs.
Okay, we'll talk about Tsoko-san and also Anchor Capital after the break. And if you'd like to send questions, please do. We'll be back shortly. Welcome back. Let's have a look at what's happening to U.S. markets, because this is the genesis of our woes. And it's actually not too bad. The S&P down 0.25%, the Nasdaq off just over 1/10, and the Dow Jones trading 0.9% weaker, which may be as a result of the oil price, which is under serious pressure at the moment. And across the Atlantic, you had the FTSE 100 gaining 0.4% today, the CAC 40 up 0.6%, and the DAX up 0.7%, which is quite interesting, given that there are all these woes about the German economy, or worries, rather, shall I say, about the health of the German economy. Still with me in studio are the wise men, David and Wayne.
Previously wise men.
or battle-hardened, shall we say. What do you make, firstly, of the European markets actually having a decent day, but then you've got all these worries about the health of the biggest engine in the European economy. Europe's been in
a quagmire for donkeys now, 10 years. They never recovered effectively from 2000.
Although if you go there, it's not an apparent market basket.
You know what?
No, you're not stumbling it there.
You know, in all fairness, with all the criticism against the Fed, if it wasn't for Hank Paulson and Tim Geithner and Bernanke and even President Bush back in 2008, we wouldn't be where we are today. They recapitalized the banks. They introduced quantitative easing, whatever they did. So the Fed, you've got to be proud of what they've achieved.
They
and for Trump to go with, European, the ECB never did anything close to that, nor the British economy.
And you can see it.
We're going off here.
On a tangent. There are quite a lot of questions. But just going back to either Tsoko-san or Anchor Capital, so we were talking about Impact, which we think you have to be circumspect.
Two companies now. You've got the gaming side and the property side.
Gaming's not in a good space.
And property's not in a great space.
No, not either in a good space.
And Anchor Capital?
I don't know. I wouldn't buy my own firm, so I wouldn't buy Anchor. Not so in these markets. Things are tough.
Yeah.
You know, things are very hard. Hard. You can see it from the bank results that come through.
It is two things are tough, but it's not as though we haven't had tough before. It's not as though we've never
We wouldn't be here.
It's not as though we've never seen this. Not as though we've never recovered either.
I think you just got to be careful and patient in times like this. You don't have to do anything that's extreme. Don't do anything extreme.
There's a question on Capitec asking, how likely is this collar structure on Capitec to trigger forced selling as it drops below a put strike? Now, I'm not sure which collar Luke, our regular viewer, is referring to, but we did run an article in the Financial Mail a couple of weeks ago about Michael Leroux, who was one of the Capitec founders who had put this collar structure in place. I think it was in June, and I'm just pulling up that story. It was... he has hedged 3.75 million shares, which is equivalent to 28% of the 13.3 million shares he indirectly owns. But I'm not sure what the strike price is.
You know what the consequences are. You can explain why people do this.
Look, what you do is that you want to say, right, I want to protect my capital. So I need to buy a put option. That means if a price, I'm just using numbers, if a price falls currently 120, whatever, if the price falls below 100, I'm saved. I've got a put option. Now, to fund that, you write a call option saying, if it goes above 130, I don't participate in that. I give it away. So there is, that's a box.
Yeah. I think generally behind...
The problem is if it falls below the 100, the person who gave you that put option, who wrote the put option, they've got to cover themselves. And you cover that by short selling. So if it goes below that, they've got to start selling short to cover their position.
So it just causes a kind of a snowballing effect
in the
share.
This is small cheese in Capitec's market cap.
Although there has been quite a significant rollover.
There's a certain angle.
Everything's rolled over. What hasn't?
There's a certain angle to this as well. Why a lot of CEOs do it is they go out, they want to diversify. They've only got, say, Capitec shares, so they want to diversify into other areas, so they borrow money. And the people from whom they borrow say, okay.
Give me security.
Give me security, but I don't want, what happens if the share falls behind that?
Limited downside.
So they limit their downside. In order to pay for their premium, they write a call.
They write a call.
Premium in for writing a call with which they buy the put.
So you got that.
Self-funding.
But
it's zero cost.
Fund behind that is generally a loan. And that's where the tightness can come. That's where the issues can come because... the person who's issued the loan sees his collateral falling, says, okay, listen, I want to protect myself. I'm going to exercise the put.
Normally
you can't force that put. It's got an expiry date. Normally you can't force an early settlement of that put structure. But it will put pressure on Capitec. But you know, as I said, this is relatively small in the bigger scheme of Capitec's market cap. You know, if tomorrow Trump signs a deal with China, you know, don't worry about that put.
There are a number of them out in the market, which is worth, as we see banking shares and other shares fall, one's got to look at some of these structures and what the consequences can be. We've seen calamity before.
Yeah.
Seen
calamity.
Especially in the smaller cap shares. But, you hope kind of a bigger company with more, maybe a liquid, sort of well-traded shareholder base. There is a question on, I met a very nice man called James wandering around our offices a little bit earlier today, and he has sent in a question about Intu. Now, Wayne, actually there were questions last week because, of course, last week was when they announced that they may have to have a rights offer, that they really are succumbing to their debt. So he had bought it at 42 Rand a share. It's now, what, 7, 8 Rand a share? What do you do? Do you just...
I would
throw in the
just
towel?
Worry, that's all you
do. You just worry, but you don't sell it.
I don't think
you can
sell it.
These things were massively expensive, and certainly to our credit, we never pumped them when they were up at the highs. But at these levels, if Britain survives, if Intu survives, I mean, these things are cheaper than SA property companies, man. They're giving you a better yield, admittedly historic yield, and this one's not going to maintain its yield, that's for sure. But these things have been... pummeled.
But it's also got a particular case of a lot of debt.
High debt.
This has got high debt, and the values are also being negatively affected by structural change, i.e. online shopping. But Capco is a bit different, and they're going to split Capco now, so Yeah, look, it's a difficult, it is truly a difficult one, this, because on any metrics, these things look seriously cheap. But cheap could also mean you're on the verge of bankruptcy because there's too much debt here. They have been selling some assets. They can probably sell some more assets. Yeah. And there are buyers of physical properties there, because physical property in the UK now is dirt cheap.
Yeah. I just hope they can pull around, because somewhere in the 208 or 209, we had some very smartly dressed people who came here with laptops and British accents and started to sell something called Glanmore, which took out the entire South Africa. Anybody, I think there's still people walking around now and are being punished by having bought Glanmore.
Okay, I'm glad I was one of them.
I know. Very happy I didn't hear that.
I'm sure there are a lot of people watching us.
Send us an email if you got taken in by these sharp talking
British people.
Oh, everything was great. Brits. You know, these are all shopping centres around. But remember, this was the heart of a property boom.
Yeah. Please ask the panel their view on Fiat, BMW, Unibail, Rodamco, Westfield. And whether they believe value investing is dead.
No. Well, first of all, I mean, global motor cars, quite a few things. Global cars are in the bit of a doldrums here. Mm. Car sales are going down. But of course, that
except for Ferrari.
Mm. Ferrari's smart shirts and fancy hats is going up. We were talking about value investing.
Okay.
Value investing ain't dead. Every type, there's no one winner in any kind of investment, value, momentum, growth, call it whatever you want to, but they all go through cycles.
Yeah.
So it's not dead. In fact, we could be building up to a massive value cycle.
I don't think you have to classify yourself as anything.
Yeah, I think David's right in that one.
Because that also, you sort of yoke yourself under a mantle, if
you understand a business and you've done the work, you'll know whether it's a good buy or whether it's not a good buy.
You mustn't, I agree with David, you must try your best to interpret what cycle the market's in at any particular stage. It has been clear growth for 10 years, clear growth cycle. Stroke momentum cycle, but value could be just around the corner. Because that's love.
If you want value, Capco is value.
Yeah,
Capco is value. You know, in the
European
in the
banks are value.
Yeah. Oh, there's a question on Spanish banks. Does the panel have a view on the failing Spanish banks? Are they failing? I must say, I haven't really.
Spain looks like one of the bright spots of the European economy, but I can't really.
I only
know banks Santander, but I know very little about other Spanish banks.
Okay. Libstar on a 3 to 5 year view.
Yeah, it's been all over the place. Yeah. Eh? I know they're doing presentations.
They're doing it now.
Are they? And I'm struggling to get my thoughts right on this one.
I mean, they have very good customers, and they've got, you know, so Woolworths, you know, they do the ready-made meals.
I'm not going to say anything, otherwise I have Heidi Heldene sending me emails tomorrow, and I have the whole Lipstar staff, because I said something here once. When you see that big fall in November, I made a comment, and I've had to try and redeem myself since, so I'm being quiet.
Shapiro has never worried you.
How incredibly boring of you.
Never worried you, Shapiro.
But they're doing okay. I think, you know, they've got, they went through troubled times, but they've got some very solid brands underneath them. And I think they've been caught in tough times. But I mean, I can't fault the company for the kind of brands that they have and management, so and so. But times are rough here.
I know. What about Mondi? I know we just spoke about it briefly, but, you know, please can the team advise, from Monday the 29th of July, it's just plummeted.
Well, look, it's not the only one that's plummeted. But
it's at a 52-week low, huh?
It's fallen. Look,
and
we
its
think
results weren't bad.
We think, for what it's worth, that this is proper buying opportunity in Mondi. For what it's worth,
I think it's one of the better quoted rand hedge stocks you can.
Nothing's changed in the company. There was no downside, no real bad news in the results, and yet it has been pummeled there.
There are issues there, but I think which you would have picked up in Impact and you would have picked up in Sappi. So the market itself is under pressure, particularly on the pricing side.
They've changed that whole law about scrap paper imports into China and the input into the mills.
Very quick question before we get to stock picks. Exxaro, any thoughts there? It's coal. I mean, is coal going to be under the same pressure as iron ore and copper?
Coal's under more pressure, because coal was under pressure when iron ore and the rest were basking in the sunlight.
Yeah.
Coal is a structural declining coal. Mm. Not, I'm talking thermal coal now. Met coal, which is what they use to make iron, is actually looking still very good, but thermal coal, which is the majority of their business, is not looking good globally.
And then they've got the iron ore component as well.
Yeah.
Okay. Unfortunately, there are questions that we haven't been able to get to, so I do apologize to viewers.
Yeah, we react too much.
Your stock picks this evening
boring.
Are cash. Because cash. This is where
Bitcoin,
you want
gold,
to
anything. Anything pretty. That's not the stock market. Yeah.
I mean, it takes a certain, a certain zen calm to just sit back and say,
well, you've got no option, otherwise you're going to jump off a building if you don't sit back.
You know what happens, you've got to just say, this you shouldn't be watching this program.
We've seen it, we've seen this before. It happens fairly regularly every 8 to 12 years. Yeah. It's not unusual. It's happened before. It will happen again. We've recovered from situations way worse than this. 2008 is 40 times worse than what we are now. It just doesn't feel like it because we've forgotten about 2008.
Yeah.
We recovered from that. We survived. We're still here. Shapiro's still here.
Yeah, so just go out for dinner and don't watch our show.
It's not the time to take major decisions.
Okay, thanks. Thanks for killing our audience off. David Wayne, thanks for joining us this evening. David Shapiro from Sassman Securities. Wayne McCurry is from F&B Wealth and Investments. And we'll be back with Stockwatch tomorrow night at 7:30. Have a good evening. Your stock picks this evening
boring.
Are cash. Because cash. This is where
Bitcoin,
you want
gold,
to
anything. Anything pretty. That's not the stock market.
I mean, it takes a certain, a certain zen calm to just sit back and say,
well, you've got no option, otherwise you're going to jump off a building if you don't sit back.
You know what happens, you've got to just say, this you shouldn't be watching this program.
We've seen it. We've seen this before. It happens fairly regularly every 8 to 12 years. It's not unusual. It's happened before. It will happen again. We've recovered from situations way worse than this. 2008 is 40 times worse than what we are now. It just doesn't feel like it because we've forgotten about 2008.
Yeah.
We recovered from that. We survived. We're still here. Shapiro's still here.
Yeah, so just go out for dinner and don't watch our show.
It's not the time to take major decisions.
Okay, thanks. Thanks for killing our audience off. David Wayne, thanks for joining us this evening. David Shapiro from Sassman Securities. Wayne McCurry is from F&B Wealth and Investments. And we'll be back with Stockwatch tomorrow night at 7:30. Have a good evening.